is Corolla Digital.
Hey, this is Adam.
And Matt.
And here's what's coming up on this week's CarCast. So I try to explain to people about the Long Beach Grand Prix and participating in the pro and or celebrity race. Like NASCAR, so you're doing what? Some kind of NASCAR ride-along or something? And you're like, no, it's a race. And all I ever tell people is there's 50,000 people there. I know my family's picturing me in a shopping cart going in a circle with like a rope tied to like a stake in the center, yeah. Of you pushing me in a circle and me yelling go.
Well, that's fun too.
And like three homeless guys standing there. Like, but it's the crowd. It's the event. It's like the pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
The part where they drive you out. They pre-park your car on the grid. And then they drive you out in the tundra.
Yeah, they valet park your race car.
Right. You can listen to the show free through iTunes, the Adam Carolla app, or visit CarCastShow.com.
From Level 5 City in Glendale, it's This Week with Larry Miller. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who really hates wax figures. Hi, folks, and welcome back to This Week with Larry Miller. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And you know, that music once again makes me smile, and I love saying that every week. I will let you know, I'll be the first to tell you when it doesn't really do much for me. But boy, the thought of all those musicians sitting around in, what, 1931, 1926, something like that, and hearing the sousaphone, it just hysterical, that song, and terrifically done. It's very well done by good musicians, but it's about as good as it's ever going to get. Terrific song, and boy, they get better every week. Of course, that's the Ravi Bhatia Orchestra, and the Sue McAllister Dancers, featuring boy tenor Patrick Dobrynin, asking the musical question, why are you in a movie, but you're on TV? Well, Colonel Jeff and I thought that had a lot of wisdom. Now, it could be I had too much Korean barbecue for lunch, which is true, because when you have a big pile of, well, Korean barbecue, it was very good in a small out-of-the-way place, but what you need and want after the Korean barbecue is a Korean barbecue nap, or just a nap in Korea. If you can go to Korea for a nap, that's what you really want. Pardon me, that's a Korean barbecue cough. There's a button here to press, by the way, for cough. No, there's not. I didn't think so. And they both just shook their heads through the window. No, there's not. Well, at any rate, though, as Patrick Dobrynin says, why are you in a movie, but you're on TV? Well, that's a pretty good question. And first of all, it's important to say, not in the matter in the search for full disclosure, but as the Colonel pointed out, that and we both remembered, that we know Patrick Dobrynin. He came by here to the studio to say hello and to greet everyone and to be part of things, to get a look at the, at the studio here in Glendale and to say hello. And it was good seeing him. And most important of all, not most important, but certainly up there in importance, he brought not just beer, he brought a lot of beer. And to be honest, that's something you're going to remember. If you say, oh, well, it's just beer. Yeah, but I remembered it. And so did Colonel Jeff. And so, Patrick, thank you for sending that, a terrific question in. Why are you in a movie, but you're on TV? The only thing I could come up with was that, well, TV is something that from roughly 1950 to 1960, TV was something you always turned on. You turn on the TV. Hey, where's the TV? Turn on the TV. You want to watch a game? Turn on the TV. Something's on the TV. There's something on the TV. And in the days when they were just flat things that you put on a metal stand, but they were flat enough to, well, put a can of Patrick's beer on top or a comic book. Shows you the kind of house I grew up in, by the way. You mean a chessboard? No, a can of beer and a comic book. Well, on the chessboard. But, or, you know, some kind of 44 Magnum. You can put anything on the TV. These are things you could put on the TV. So everything that was on, we have to turn it on, make sure something's on. And so that could be a reason why the word for TV was always something, well, who's in the show? Well, someone's on TV. That could be a reason. I know that last step is a little thin there. It's my idea, and I still think it's a little thin. But that's the only thing I could come up with. You're in a movie because everyone's in the movie. You have to be in the movie. To make the movie, people make the movie so people can be in the movie. Let's go see a movie and see who's in the movie. They're not on the movie. There's nothing to get on. You don't even get on the roof of the movie theater. You don't get on anything. There's nothing on a movie. But you're in the movie. So if there's anything in that, thank you, Patrick, first of all. And thank you for bringing a ton of really good beer. Do you remember the kind of beer? It was something off kilter. It wasn't regular beer. It was something like hunting beer. And Jeff's just typing in Sierra Nevada. So you're not just a fan of that mountain range. You're saying that's the name of the beer. Colonel Jeff has lost his mind. Was that a good beer? No, no. I just like the mountains, the Sierra Nevadas. And that was a Sierra Nevada beer he brought. And he brought a bunch of it. He brought a couple of cases, didn't he? Bless his heart. All right. So at any rate there, and by Amazon. That's right. And by Amazon. We are brought to you by Amazon. Amazon is our sponsor, and we're very proud of them. Amazon, as you know, is the greatest buying company in the world. You can buy anything in the world you want, anything you can think of, anything you want, anything you have, anything you can get on Amazon, and that's a big source of pride for us, for Amazon, and for you. You just go on to your internet and punch in Amazon, and it'll take you right there, right? No! Wrong! Don't! That's a stupid thing to do. That's the wrong thing to do. You never, ever, ever go right to Amazon. What you do is go to our website. And what's our website? You should know this better than I do. It's the LarryMillerPodcast.com. Well, not the. LarryMillerPodcast.com. And one of the things we have on our website is a banner that says Amazon. You click on that, and it will take you to Amazon. And that's where you get anything in the world you want, except, of course, an actual Amazon. We say this every week. I love to tell you that, remember, if you ever get an actual Amazon, a tall, muscular, very sexual woman, and you're not exactly sure if she's real, please do nothing and call us first. And Colonel Chris, and I'm sorry, Dr. Chris, Colonel Jeff, and I will be out there, and we will, well, let's just say, take her off your hands. And check to see if she's real. We cannot do that in front of you. We cannot do that in public. It has to be done in private. But that's just something, that's just on the side. That's if you ever get an actual Amazon. Hit our banner. Go to Amazon. You buy everything you want, and then they send us part of that money. They send us a percentage of that, and we're very happy. Because just like you, and just like anyone sane, we sure do like money. And we sure like Amazon for sending it. So thank you. And right on the same page there, on the same podcast, that's LarryMillerPodcast.com, you can also go to PayPal. That is PayPal, PayPal, right? And once again, I have to ask these questions. If you listen to the show, if you're a fan of the show, you know that I've never actually seen any of these things. I don't care to see any of these things. I don't need to see any of these things. As long as Colonel Jeff and Dr. Chris tell me these things are on there, it's good enough for me. So you can go to PayPal on our website, and what we want you to do is right there, go to PayPal, go to the favorite bar wherever you are, your favorite bar. Maybe you've never been there. Maybe you always thought, well, that bar is the place I have to go. We're not talking about really, really fancy bars. We're talking about regular places, or as people where I grew up used to say, you know, a regular joint. There were two distinctions. I don't know if I ever talked about this. There were two ways to use that. that phrase, there was a regular joint, or with a thumb hooked over the shoulder, you could say, a regular joint. And that was, that. But it meant two completely different things. A regular joint was a real compliment. A regular joint meant, hey, you can go in there. Anyone can go in there. You're not going to get into a fight. They have good drinks. They make them well. They have good beers. They have, the peanuts are good. Whatever they put on the bar is good. So that's a regular joint. How's that place? It's a regular joint. So that means it's a good, it's a compliment. It's a very regular place. It's a regular joint. And the other one with the thumb hooked over the shoulder and pronounced, it's a regular joint. That means you can be taken there. That is, you can be conned there. You can be kidnapped there. You can be punched there. You can be killed there. So that's a regular joint. You have to be careful there. So that's a regular joint means they let a lot of people in there who are, well, substandard for the kind of drinking that most fans of This Week with Larry Miller like to do. And so go to PayPal, click on something, put on a bar you like, and as we say here, send us what three drinks cost. One for Colonel Jeff, one for Dr. Chris, and one for me. Send us whatever that is. If it's $2 a piece, $4 a piece, $7 a piece, it doesn't matter what they are. Send us enough for three drinks, and we will. We haven't done this yet, and you've been very generous. Thank you. We are going to get out again for a fried chicken dinner evening, and you know what? We're going to go to a place and buy a drink each with your money. And then we're going to buy 10 more drinks each with our money, just to make sure all the corners are rounded. But really, thank you. Go to Amazon on our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com. Go to PayPal on our podcast, our website, oh, whatever it is. And that's all you have to do. And that luckily leads us right into the joke of the week. That's right, the joke of the week. The joke of the week, which was also sent in by the head of our dance company this week, Sue McAllister. I was telling to Colonel Jeff, by the way, I was saying to him, it's so neat when sometimes the names of, well, the guy who runs the orchestra, the hidden featuring boy tenor, whoever that is, and that's Patrick Dobrynin, who brought a lot of great Sierra Nevada beer. And those names sound, well, how do you like that? That's Ravi Bhatia and Patrick Dobrynin, which sounds, it's like a Russian name. So, and then I love that the third name is always, and Sue McAllister. So it just seems like suddenly there's someone just very, very regular there. And Sue sent in this joke that we thought was a pretty darn good one. And here it is. John had just won first prize at a cat show. That's funny right there, by the way. I said to the colonel when I read it, I said, if that's not the start of a good joke, I don't know what is. So John had just won first prize at a cat show and had received a 10-day cruise to Puerto Rico. Wow. The catch was, though, pets weren't allowed on the cruise. So John decided to leave his cat with his best friend, Alice. Alice agreed to come over to John's house and live with his mom for the duration of the cruise. John told Alice, just feed the cat 3 meals a day and take good care of him. He's my prize-winning cat. And with that, he left. So the next day, John phoned Alice on his cell phone and asked, how are things? To which Alice responded, things are fine. How's Mom? Mom's fine. How's the cat? The cat's fine. Satisfied, John hung up. Next day, he calls Alice again, asking the same questions. How are things? Things are fine. How's Mom? Mom's fine. How's the cat? The cat's dead. What? John exploded. What? The cat? What? John was quite distressed. How could you let it die? It was my prize cat. And she said, well, John, I'm sorry, but I couldn't do anything. I didn't see it. But what I think happened was that the cat was on the roof, fell off, and broke his leg. Then he hobbled out onto the road and got run over, I think. And John was cooling down a little bit now, and he said, well, couldn't you have tried to break it to me over time? Take a little more time. You could have said it bit by bit. For example, you could have said first that, well, the cat's on the roof. And then the next day said, well, the cat fell off the roof. And then the third day, he broke its leg. And then the fourth, so anyway, you see what I'm saying? And Alice says, yeah, I got it. Sorry, John. Okay, bye. John hung up. The next day, he phones Alice again. How are things? Things are fine. How's Mom? Mom's on the roof. So we liked that joke a lot. Colonel Jeff and I laughed, and Dr. Chris just laughed. So you know what? That's a pretty good joke. And in the best tradition of all jokes, I love that build-up again, that John won first prize at a cat show. Now, when does that ever happen? Okay, fair enough. And then that's good. And he says to his best friend, Alice, you know, that, so you'll come over and live with my mom. He lives with his mom. All this stuff is fine. In a joke, you don't stop and say, so why was he living with his mom? Well, because it comes in later. That's why. Just sit and listen to the joke. That's pretty good. And it's fun to tell, like all good jokes, it's fun to tell that way. Find yourself a rhythm that, how are things? Things are fine. How's Mom? Mom's fine. It's fun to do that, and it also brings the joke along. It really makes it, well, fun to listen to. And you could say, how's the joke? The joke's fine. So you know what? Thank you, Sue, and thank you for being in charge of our dancers. And that joke was from Sue McAllister. Which brings us to an interesting point here at the Poetry Corner. Yes, it's the Poetry Corner, and the Poetry Corner that I love, that we've all grown to love on the show here. And I'm glad some of you folks, or most of you folks, or all of you folks, seem to like it. It's a nice step aside to think of language in a different way. Poetry can be gorgeous. It's if it's really good to listen to and has a nice lyric approach and has a good rhythm and a good choice of words and tells a good story. And here's a crazy coincidence. Here's things that just shouldn't happen. Guess who sent us this poem? That's right, Sue McAllister, the head of our dancers and the woman who sent in that great joke about John, which was fine, and Sue sent in a poem we really liked. And the Colonel and I said, actually, maybe we're just starting to like Sue. We have no idea who this is. But who sent the poem? Sue McAllister. Really? I like it a lot. Larry, you haven't read it yet. But I'm about to read it to you. I have read it, and I think it's a really good entry into our poetry corner here. It tells a good story, and it moves along. It takes a couple of minutes, but I hope you like it as much as we do here. It's written by a fellow named Edward E. Paramore, Jr., and it's called The Ballad of Yukon Jake. And especially we like a nice touch, and maybe that's one of the reasons Sue sent this in, because it's called Begging Robert W. Service's Pardon, because it talks about, well, there was a great poem I read a couple of weeks ago called The Cremation of McGee. And I forget his first name now, but you'll see that'll come up in this. And it tells a story in a very, very nice way that makes you think of Robert W. Service. So here we go. The Ballad of Yukon Jake. Oh, the North Country is a hard country that mothers a bloody brood, and its icy arms hold hidden charms for the greedy, the sinful, and lewd. And strong men rust from the gold and the lust that sears the Northland soul. But the wickedest born from the pole to the horn is the hermit of Shark Tooth Shoal. Now, Jacob Kame was the hermit's name in the days of his pious youth, ere he cast a smirch on the village church by betraying a girl named Ruth. But now men quake at Yukon Jake, the hermit of Shark Tooth Shoal, for that is the name that Jacob Kame is known by from Nome to the Pole. He was just a boy in the parson's joy ere he fell for the gold and the muck, and had learned to pray with the hogs and the hay on a farm near Keokuk. But a service tale of illicit kale and whiskey and women wild drained the morals clean as a soup tureen from this poor but honest child. He longed for the bite of a Yukon night and in the northern light's weird flicker, or a game of stud in the frozen mud and the taste of raw red liquor. He wanted to mush along in the slush with a team of husky hounds and to fire his gat at a beaver hat and knock it out of bounds. So he left his home for the Helltown Gnome on Alaska's ice-ribbed shores, and he learned to curse and to drink, and worse, till the rum dripped from his pores. When the boys on a spree were drinking it free in a Malamute saloon, and Dan McGrew and his dangerous crew shot craps with the piebald coon. When the kid on his stool banged away like a fool at a jag-time melody, and the barkeep vowed to the hard-boiled crowd that he'd cremate Sam McGee. Then Jacob Kame, who had taken the name of Yukon Jake the Killer, would rake the dive with his 45 till the atmosphere grew chiller. With a sharp command, he'd make 'em stand and deliver their hard-earned dust, then drink the bar dry of rum and rye as a Klondike bully must. Without coming to blows, he would tweak his nose of dangerous Dan McGrew, and becoming bolder, throw over his shoulder the lady that's known as Lou. Oh, tough as a steak with Yukon Jake, hard-boiled as a picnic egg. He washed his shirt in the Klondike dirt and drank his rum by the keg. In fear of their lives, or because of their wives, he was shunned by the best of his pals, an outcast he from the camaraderie of all but wild animals. So he bought him the whole of Shark Tooth Shoal, a reef in the Bering Sea, and he lived by himself on a sea lion's shelf in lonely iniquity. But miles away in Keokuk, IA, did a ruined maiden fight to remove the smirch from the village church by bringing the heathen light. And the elders declared that all would be squared if she carried the holy words from her Keokuk home to the Helltown Gnome to save those sinful birds. So 2 weeks later she took a freighter for the gold-cursed land near the pole, but heaven ain't made for a lass that's betrayed. She was wrecked on Shark Tooth Shoal. All hands were tossed in the sea and lost, all but the maiden Ruth, who swam to the edge of the sea lion's ledge, where abode the love of her youth. He was hunting a seal for his evening meal. He handled a mean harpoon when he saw at his feet not something to eat, but a girl in a frozen swoon, whom he dragged to his lair by her dripping hair, and he rubbed her knees with gin. And his great surprise, she opened her eyes and revealed his original sin. His 8 months' beard grew stiff and weird, and it felt like a chestnut burr. And he swore by his gizzard and the Arctic blizzard that he'd do right by her. Then the cold sweat froze on the end of her nose till it gleamed like a Tekla pearl, while her bright hair fell like a flame from hell down the back of the grateful girl. But a hopeless rake was Yukon Jake, the hermit of Sharktooth Shoal, and the dizzy maid he betrayed and wrecked her immortal soul. Then he rowed her ashore with a broken oar, and he sold her to Dan McGrew for a husky dog and some hot eggnog, as rascals are wont to do. Now ruthless Roos is a maid uncouth with scarlet cheeks and lips, and the sings rough songs to the drunken throngs that come from the sealing ships. For a rouge-stained kiss from this infamous miss, they will give a seal's sleek fur, or perhaps a sable if they are able. It's much the same to her. Oh, the North Country is a rough country that mothers a bloody brood, and its icy arms hold hidden charms for the greedy, the sinful, and lewd. and strong men rust from the gold to the lust that sears the Northland soul, but the wickedest born from the pole to the horn was the hermit of Shark Tooth Shoal. Well, thank you, Sue. I think we all think here that's a terrific poem, and fun to perform, fun to read for you all. It's not short, it's not a limerick, but I think it tells a terrific story, and it's fun to go along to. Hey, look what happens to these people, and look how they drink, and imagine it's actually a good poem like this paints a picture you can just almost half tell what it was like to be in Alaska in, what, 1870, 1880, earlier, 1850? You can just imagine. Well, they didn't have room service then. They didn't have hotels then. But any way you got by, well, you could turn up or you could turn down. But, well, as long as you didn't wind up the hermit of Shark Tooth Shoal. Well, thank you, Sue. That was just great. It makes me happy again about the Poetry Corner. And in a way, though, and it fits because Sue sent these things in, there's something about Colonel Jeff and I started because I was thinking about, well, what about a magic movie moment? What would be a good choice this week for a magic movie moment? What would make something really fit, make something really good that was good to listen to about a magic movie moment? And please keep sending things like this in, poems and what a real magic movie moment is for you. And what that means, remember, is that a movie you've liked 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, doesn't have to be old, but it could be from the 30s, the 40s, 50s, it could be from last week. But it's something you've seen a lot, and it's something you really like each time you see it, and there's a moment, though, or a scene in it that really makes you smile every time. It doesn't have to be a comedy, but it could be a comedy. But it's something where you yourself, just you alone, have always said, you know what? For me, that's a magic movie moment. That's something that helps the movie. It may not be really related to the plot, but it's something you look forward to every time. And it's like, well, it's like the theme song of the show here, of our show. It always satisfies, and it never disappoints. So please send those in about a magic movie moment. And this is what, well, this is the topic that came up. And the Colonel and I and the doctor and I started to smile, thinking back that in all the Marx Brothers movies, and, oh, not just Marx Brothers movies, but in all the Three Stooges movies, in all the Three Stooges shorts, in all the movies that had, well, a group of guys like that, and they were wonderful. How much did you laugh at the Marx Brothers or at the Three Stooges? And by the way, there are so many to see. I can't recommend enough. Just for goodness sake, look at anything the Marx Brothers do, like A Night at the Opera, let's say. They're just wonderful movies. The Stooges, similarly, I just can't say enough about how wonderful it is to sit there and giggle like a buffoon, to say, how do you like that? This is funny. It's silly, and the hitting on the head and all the sounds, they work every single time. And for me and my kids and, well, the Colonel and the doctor, so always see them. But we started talking today about the women in those movies and how beautiful they were. And, you know, the women, whether it's the farmer's daughters that the Three Stooges run into, or anyone that the Marx Brothers run into, how, well, the women in them were always young Hollywood actresses, and they were looking for parts, and they, you know, would jump on this, anything, for goodness sake, anything in a Marx Brothers movie or a Three Stooges movie or the shorts before the movies that we all grew to love. You know, that, those were good parts to get because you're working and you're getting along the way and you're going to be seen by everyone in Hollywood. And one of the things we laughed at today as we started talking about it was these are young actresses in the 1930s or the 1940s or the 1950s, and they come from all over America and all over Canada and all over the world. And what they are is lovely. What they are is slender. What they are is very sexy. And what they are is good actresses, But what they also are is about 7 inches tall than any of the men. They're so much taller than, well, the Three Stooges or the Marx Brothers, who were great in everything they did. They were just great. But they grew up, well, in parts of New York where people weren't eating an awful lot, and they weren't either. So the Stooges, these young, beautiful women who came as actresses, now you remember something, they weren't that tall either, because this is 1937, 1947, 1957. They just weren't that tall. The women, the actresses, were, well, 5'4", 5'5", 5'6", was gigantic. But they were really 5'3 to 5'5", and they were very, very lovely. But then you realize, so what were the Stooges? 4'10"? Because they just, and the Marx Brothers the same. They're wonderful, handsome, interesting men, and they were hysterical at everything they did, and they told great stories and very talented. But when they stood together to all get married, and the three girls were going to marry the three boys, and you realize, again, and my kids noticed this too, this boy, they're kind of short. And that's the truth. It doesn't take anything away from the movie. It's still wonderful to watch the movie, but you realize that, for instance, in the Marx Brothers movies, they used Margaret Dumont an awful lot. She was great. God bless her. She was so wonderful. She was the one, well, doctor, it's good to see you again. And she was American, but she put on that sort of fake British air of the wealthy woman in, well, the 1930s and the 1940s. How good to see you again, doctor. And she was, you know, busty and had the pearls and the long back dress, and then she was always moving the story along. Says, well, I don't think you should act that way. And she was just wonderful in everything she did. But you realize the same thing. Margaret Dumont, next to the Marx Brothers, Margaret Dumont looked like she was in the WNBA. I mean, she looked huge. She looked like a gigantic human woman. And she wasn't. Even for the times, for these times, for any times. She wasn't 6'6". She was same thing. She was 5'5", 5'4". And even if you put heels on her, she's 5'6". And then she really towered over the Marx Brothers. And it was just wonderful. And that's what we smiled at today. That's what made us laugh. Not at them. Not at anything. But it shows you again, it teaches you a lesson that when a movie story is terrific, and when it's really well made, and in the case of, well, the Three Stooges and the Marx Brothers, when it was really well made and really funny at the time, and just wonderful movies, you really didn't care that it was a tiny bit preposterous, and they didn't care. You know, they're not going to, it's not like movies today where a shorter actor, people we all love, I'm not going to name any names, but you know what I mean. Sometimes they're a little on the shorter side, and the beautiful actress they hire is, well, appropriately shorter than they are. And they just fit together really well. So today I think the numbers are high enough so that, well, some shorter women come out to Hollywood and they can get into a movie with some shorter actors and look just fine. But remember, when it doesn't happen that way, it still works awfully well. If you think of all the great parts Joe Pesci has done in just him and De Niro and everything they did with Ray Liotta and Goodfellas, but you think of when that happens, when Joe comes in with one of the other gangsters who's about as tall as Joe is, and then they come in with showgirls, and the showgirls, well, look pretty great. The showgirls look terrific because the showgirls are about average height today for showgirls in Las Vegas, and the showgirls are, what, 5'10", 6 feet? And you put them in heels, and they walk in next to Joe and Frank Vincent and all these folks and who are great in everything they do. And you never notice because you really don't care. It somehow works. It worked that way for Edward G. Robinson when he played all those great gangsters, and the same with Jimmy Cagney, by the way. As great as they were magnificent, but they weren't that tall, and the actresses they worked with were about average for the time, which was a pretty decent sort taller than they were, and it never really bothered you. So just remembered, it made us laugh here today. Not howl laughing, but just smile in affection, in pleasure, thinking back, how do you like that? They just always did it. They always made them. They didn't take an extra month or year to cast someone who was a little shorter as a woman there. They just didn't do it. They hired anyone they could. And at the time, by the way, my wife and I have a business manager named Marty, and he grew up here. And he's a classic Southern California boy with a family out here, and they raised him. And Larry Fine from the Three Stooges was his uncle, and he used to describe they loved him. He would cut every meal, Thanksgiving, any meal, it doesn't matter. Well, Uncle Larry was always invited and always came by because it's a family meal. It didn't matter what the holiday was. And Larry, because you do this, you bring your wife, you bring your girlfriend, you bring anybody special. Larry would always come, as he described it, with, well, some just gorgeous, tall, buxom, killer blonde. And Larry, again, was 4'11". No, I'm saying he was taller than that, and he was great. He was so great at everything he did. But remember, he's sitting next to a very attractive, tall, blonde woman in a gown on a Sunday afternoon. And she's all over the place. But they loved that. They didn't make fun of it. They thought, it's great to see who Uncle Larry's going to bring this week. And Marty always said, every single meal, every single holiday, after dessert, when they were all sitting around the table still, that's when Uncle Larry would start telling jokes. And he didn't need to. It wasn't that he needed attention. They all loved it. They all waited for it. He must have known he's one of those great comic actors who knew just thousands of jokes. And he was, if you remember from The Stooges, he was a very funny guy. They were all very, very talented comics. And Uncle Larry would start telling jokes, and Marty said they would howl at every joke. They weren't trying to make him feel good. The jokes got funnier and funnier, and they were all clean, just good comics jokes. And Larry was the kind of a guy, well, like a great hitter in baseball, just, you know, slip into the warm-up tent there and just hit balls into the parking lot all day long. And Larry would start to do that, and he would tell, gosh, 15 jokes, 20 jokes. And each one was people howling. They were crying, catching their breaths and pounding the table. And that was about a 40-minute coffee and joke period there at every meal. So you know what? Who wouldn't want to have heard that? I would. And the colonel and the doctor wouldn't. I'll bet all of you out there would, too, to know that Uncle Larry was going to tell a bunch of jokes. And they were going to be great because he was great. So you know what? It makes you think, though. That's what made me start to realize how wonderful it was to know that the really, really gorgeous and sexy women of the time weren't, well, Amazon women. They were just regular women who were really pretty and had come from every bus stop all over America, and they got to Hollywood, and next thing they knew, they were in line in a movie to marry one of the Three Stooges. And I just think that's wonderful. I think that's a wonderful thing to realize. And you never know where this is going to come from with women. Just a couple of days ago, I was working in Las Vegas at doing a comedy show for a corporate job. It was just a small group, a wonderful group of folks, only about 70 people. 60 or 70 folks, and they were throwing this event, this show, and this dinner at Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. I had never been to Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, and you have to admit right off the bat, even as a kid through a young adult through adulthood, just the name always keeps attention. That's why we're still talking about it. Madame Tussauds. Who is Madame Tussauds? Who knows? But at Madame Tussauds, it's better than Carla Ann's Wax Museum. So it's Madame Tussauds, and they have a dinner area there in a room that seats just about 60 people like that. And in that room, they closed off the wax museum for the night and put everybody down in the dinner area there. And I went there for a sound check a little earlier, about 5 or 6 in the afternoon. And I'll tell you, they had some well, wax figurines in that room. Not a lot. Well, they had about 15 of them, I guess. That's probably, that's not a little. And just off to my right, there was one, a guy in a suit, a wax figure. And I said to the woman who brought me down there, runs all, who puts the shows together there, and I said, hey, who's this guy? Well, that guy over there is about 10 feet away. And she said, that's Martin Luther King Jr. And I said, oh, well, that's great. How do you like that, Martin Luther King Jr.? And then I looked at him again. It didn't look anything like Martin Luther King Jr., and that's what got me. About every 4 minutes, I'd look over again. It still looked nothing like Martin Luther King Jr. I know what he looks like. You know what he looks like. This guy looked, this statue looked nothing like him. Then there was one right across the room, across a couple of tables that was set for dinner. And I and most of the people who were there thought, well, how do you like that? They made a statue of Will Ferrell. It wasn't, though. It was of George W. Bush. And it looked nothing, I mean nothing, like George W. Bush. Plus, the skin tone was a little dark. It looked like Will Ferrell had been in a tanning parlor. And I kept thinking, what in the world is wrong with these things? They had two American astronauts wearing American flags next to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and the two astronauts looked so weird. It looked like, I said to the crowd later, where do we get our astronauts? Jockeys? Is that where we're going? They were so short. But it was still one of the guy who runs the whole museum, runs the whole area there, said to me while they were eating dinner, he said, hey, do you want to take a look through a little private show just that you can walk through, see Madame Tussauds? I said, well, I guess so, sure. How do you like that? And we started walking through, and they had, folks, I'm here to tell you, within about 30 seconds, it was empty, remember. It was just the figures. It was so creepy, and I'm not the scared type, you understand. It was so creepy, though. Each one of these figures, that's the thing. The closer they get to really good, to actually looking like a person, the creepier they get. And I realized, I thought, Madame Tussauds might have been built by just aliens from another planet many, many millions of miles away, but only built through what they saw through telescopes. So to them, these things looked exactly like human beings. Why would they do that? I don't know. Why would anyone do this? So that if you saw these statuettes, I realized that when I was a kid and throughout adulthood, you know those science fiction movies where you have to spend the night in a haunted house in order to get the $10 million you were given in the will and the last will and testament, but, oh, there's just one thing. You have to spend the night in the haunted mansion. And I knew as a kid, and I know today, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do it. If you said, yeah, but you get $10 million, I would still not spend a night alone in a haunted house. I don't want to do that, okay? I didn't want to do it as a kid. I didn't want to do it as an adult. Because is anything there? I don't know, and I don't want to find out. If something creaks and my head explodes like a melon, is that what I want? No, it's not what I want. And I knew that I would never, ever spend the night in a haunted mansion. But you know what, by the way? You know what? After seeing Madame Tussauds and the wax museum figures, in a tenth of a second, I would rather spend the night in a haunted house than see them again. If they said, never mind $10 million, if you said you get $100 million just for being alone for the night in the Madame Tussauds wax figure, I would not do it. Because just by being there alone, with all the lights on, by the way, each figure looked like it would turn to you all of a sudden and just say, hey, buddy, you got a light? And I'm telling you, that is not something you want to feel. And that's as creepy. I would spend the night in the haunted house far long before I would ever go. And I called my wife before I went on stage, before I did the show. And she said, oh, how's it going there at Madame Tussauds? Because she'd never been there either. And she said, should we go there sometime? Should we bring the kids? And I said, I don't think so. I think this is the creepiest place. They'd probably think it was fine, but I don't want to put those things in their heads. And I sure don't want to see it again. And I'll bet you a dollar you don't want to see it. And you know what, though? It just goes to show you, because the guy told me about Madame Tussaud. Well, 400 years ago, she was the daughter of a guy. It was all legal then to cut off the heads of dead bodies. Nice times we come from, isn't it, by the way? It was perfectly legal, and they wanted someone to do this, and Madame Tussaud and her father, who I guess was Monsieur Tussaud, would come. They'd cut off the heads of the dead bodies and make what they called death masks in those days. And then they would show those, and people really liked seeing them. Why? There was no TV, that's why. There was nothing. There was no radio. There was nothing to look at. And so 400 years later, all right, we're still saying, how do you like that? Where's the show tonight? It's over at Madame Tussaud's. And it worked out fine, but it just goes to show you, and that's why it went to show me again, the way we've seen, the way we've portrayed, the way we've hired, the way we've written for some of the most beautiful girls in the history of show business. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter how short the men are, and it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is you don't want to see someone who looks like a 400-year-old French woman named Madame Tussaud. You don't want to see her coming at you with a really sharp Bowie knife. I know they weren't invented yet, but she could get one. In any case, thank you again. And as always, remember, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. And that's still the truest thing I know. Have a great week, and we'll see you here next time. Bye. This has been a Larry Miller presentation. Hey, that's me. How am I doing so far?